You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and it says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we will discuss the TNA lockdown pay-per-view, social media in professional wrestling, and a host of other topics. My name is Jamie, and I'm joined today by my tag team partner, David. David, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Made the hot tag. Tag me in.
Well, I feel like I kind of commandeered the show this week by taking over the intro. I feel like I'm in power now. I feel like Vince McMahon.
it's great to be here with you again. We got a lot of great topics for the show today. So what do you think? Should we just get this started?
Yeah, let's ring the bell. TNA, lockdown review. The lockdown pay-per-view, in my mind, had more misses than hits. That said, the Jeff Hardy-Kurt Angle match was the highlight of the night. Just how good are these two performers? You know, Dave, when I watch TNA, when I watch Impact, when I watch pay-per-views, I look at these two guys, and it is clear to me that they are carrying TNA on their back. Hmm. They've already, you know, main-evented WWE pay-per-views. If one of these two were to go to the WWE today, where would they stand? Where would they fall in the roster? Would they be top-level talent, mid-level talent? Where would you see them today in WWE?
Well, I don't think there's any question that both guys could work WWE at a very high level because they've done that in the past. And really, the reason that they're not there today, I don't think anything to do with their in-ring talent. You know, I saw this topic for tonight and certainly agree that these are two tremendous performers and they put on a great wrestling match at the lockdown pay-per-view. I like the fact that they're in the program together. I think they bring out the best in each other. Do you agree with that? I mean, they have good chemistry in the ring together.
Yeah, this is a match that excites me. I can't say I always will say that about TNA matches, but this is one that you look at it and you just know it's going to be tremendous. It's kind of analogous to the CM Punk Chris Jericho match. You know that those two are going to go Broadway, if you will.
Now, the other thing too is that you have two guys with really, in my opinion, two different styles, but the styles fit each other. The intensity of Kurt Angle and, you know, Jeff Hardy, great high flyer, and they can really evoke emotion from the crowd. They can really tell a good story in there. By putting them together like this on these pay-per-views and letting them really work, as fans, we're getting the best of that.
If TNA lost either one of these two performers, it would be a huge blow to the company because they do give their all. They both had some inner demons they've had to work out. You know, hopefully Hardy's are taken care of. Because he is such a pleasure to watch in the ring.
Well, he's really different. I mean, he's very unique. But if you were WWE, I mean, bringing him back, you know, you have this wellness policy and you really are trying to be a family entertainment. You know what his demons are. You know what it is with Jeff Hardy. And it would seem to me that you know he can perform in the ring. He may be more of a headache than he's worth. Would you bring him back?
I absolutely would. We were at a pay-per-view together that he headlined.
Yep.
And you saw the crowd reaction that he received. Now, saying that, there are a number of WWE performers that will get a huge crowd reaction nowadays. But wouldn't you admit that if his music hit out of nowhere and he showed up in WWE, the crowd would go crazy?
They would, and I think he could still perform again at a high level. But now you're putting him over top of guys maybe like Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, or other people you're trying to build up who have been kind of good soldiers for your company. And I would rather see WWE continue to groom that next generation. But Hardy fits for TNA. He had a great match with Kurt Angle here at the pay-per-view, and I think that's where they should both stay for now.
Bobby Roode retained his TNA title by defeating James Storm in the main event at Lockdown. This proved to be a good match, and it's clear both Roode's and Storm's stock has risen. Could either of these guys main event a WWE pay-per-view? Dave, I like Bobby Roode. I think he's done a great job in TNA. In my mind, if Bobby Roode came to WWE, I think he would be mid-level talent.
Okay.
I think he would be in the mix with a Jack Swagger and Dolph Ziggler. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think we have to be careful because I don't think we should always be comparing TNA to WWE in the sense that if Bobby Roode and James Storm are headlining a TNA pay-per-view and putting on a good match, we as wrestling fans should be fine with that. It shouldn't always then be, well, yeah, but they wouldn't do it in WWE or, yeah, but, you know, the Ring of Honor would be different or whatever. People work in different companies. They work differently. And TNA requires different types of performances than WWE does. It's very clear with the women, for example. The WWE divas are not asked to do the same things that the TNA knockouts are. Some people like one, some people like the other, and of course there's the indie scene too. So, yes, I think they could be main event caliber guys in WWE, perhaps, but I would rather focus on that they are very good in TNA where they are. This was another match at Lockdown I enjoyed.
Well, let me ask you this, David, and I want to go back to a point that you just made. Do you think that these guys, you know, you mentioned you can't compare across TNA versus a WWE, but do you think that there is some level of talent within these guys that you must have to perform it in WWE or even TNA if you're an independent wrestler? Don't you have to have something to at least get into WWE or TNA? Some element of
course. Okay, you have to have some. You have to have some talent. You have to have some charisma. You've got to have the it factor to even get considered for a baseline indie promotion. I mean, you know, there's so many thousands of guys training, and you know, just fumbles up right to there's only a few jobs at WWE, TNA, whatever promotion you're talking about. But yeah, I mean, obviously they have to have some ability, and they do have some good ability. Now, you know, maybe Bobby Roode can wrestle circles around The Undertaker, but The Undertaker is a larger-than-life character. They've done a great job building him up, and he's a major, major attraction in that one promotion. I just don't think necessarily you can go back and forth with these guys. Do you remember, Jimmy, on the invasion angle when WCW was bought and how some guys really couldn't adjust to the WWE style?
Sure, sure.
And, you know, the ring is bigger. The WWE ring is bigger. So physically there were some challenges, but it was also the storytelling was different. And I think that's where some guys can adapt to that and some guys can't.
Yeah, you make a good point there. I mean, it is difficult to compare across promotions. Let me ask you about this. What are your thoughts, and we talked about this last week a little bit, James Storm, do you like him as a performer? What do you think of James Storm?
Yeah, see, I do like him because I like the fact that TNA is letting these guys work with the TNA title, you know, be at the top of a card on pay-per-views. Now, I give them credit for that. I really do. And you know, it's not just Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair. And, you know, we see on the internet a lot of dissension about whether Bischoff and these guys should be included. I like the fact that Bobby Roode and James Storm have put in a program here and are working the title. I respect that from the company, and I respect these two guys. I think they're making the most of their chance here.
Yeah, good points. Good points. For the Lockdown pay-per-view, TNA drew just 2,000 fans in a 9,000-seat arena. So I ask you, Dave, I want a prediction. When does TNA go under, or at least purchased by the WWE? 2,000 fans to their premier event in a 9,000-seat arena. That's just pathetic. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
That's pretty low, isn't it?
It's embarrassing. I mean,
well, it's low, although, you know, what is success? I mean, if they put on a good show and the performers can feel like they went out there and they wrestled their ass off and the matches were good, can the company at least feel good about, you know, that side of it, or is it straight business? Because people will criticize the WWE that, well, you know, that's diva-style wrestling, or Monday Night Raw is all talking. There's only like 20 minutes of actual wrestling on Monday Night Raw. You know, but the ratings are good. They make a ton of money. They build stars. So to throw it back to you in a second, what is success at this point for a promotion? Is it straight ticket sales? Because 2,000 fans is not good at all. I totally agree. But if they put on a good show and the pay-per-view buy rates were okay, is that success?
Yeah, and again, we talked about this a little bit last week. TNA is owned by some outside investors. Why do these investors put their money in? To make money. And if they put a dollar in, they expect to make a percentage of that back. When you're drawing 2,000 fans at your premier event, that's not going to make money for the investors, which means if I'm one of those investors, I say this was not a successful wrestling event.
Mm-hmm.
I hear what you're saying from an individual performer standpoint. I think guys like Hardy and Kurt Angle and Storm and Roode, they can walk away and feel good about their performance. But at the end of the day, it does come back to money, whether you're TNA or whether you're a publicly owned, traded company in the WWE. Mm-hmm. That has to be the measuring stick, doesn't it?
Let me say, though, I don't think the WWE will ever buy TNA. I think they bought WCW because it was a hotter property at the time. It was viewed as a threat, and I think there was a real ego thing there where Vince said, you know what, you idiots were challenging us for so long, now I'm buying you, look, I win. I don't think in this case, I think he would just wait for TNA to go out of business and then take the guys that he wants on his roster.
Yeah, it's amazing when you go back and look at Vince's purchase of WCW. Do you know he paid only $3 million for WCW? And that included all of their merchandise, all of their history, $3 million.
Then remember the invasion was like DDP and Booker T. If you're gonna buy WCW and it's not Sting and Ric Flair,
yep.
That's to me the single biggest reason why that invasion angle fell through.
Yeah, you're right. It was not good. But Dave, I do think that by WrestleMania 29, my prediction is that by WrestleMania 29, TNA will cease to exist.
World Wrestling Entertainment. The World Heavyweight Championship has a long storied history, but should the WWE continue to recognize this title? Interesting topic, in my opinion, Jamie, because I think if you ask 1,000 wrestling fans what's the most important championship, the WWE title or the World Heavyweight title, not everybody may know that the WWE title is the premier championship in that promotion. I think it kind of muddies the waters a little bit. Someone's the World Heavyweight Champion. That sounds pretty important. Oh, but there's the WWE Champion. I remember when you and I were growing up, there was no confusion. Hulk Hogan was the World Champion.
Yeah, we were at WrestleMania, and my wife asked, you know, what's the difference between the WWE title and the World Heavyweight title? I tried to explain it, and she just looked at me and said, well, isn't the World Heavyweight Champion, you know, bigger than the WWE Champion?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does seem somewhat logical.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, you can say things, well, like the one spins, you know. The belts look different. But and I know they want the brands. They want one on Raw, one on SmackDown. Or, you know, we talk about this all the time. They're used, you know, basically to build a card and as a prop. But I would like one world champion, whatever you want to call it.
I would be fine with that, Dave, as long as it doesn't result in more WWE title changes. What I mean by that is right now you have a second, you know, another belt, another top-level belt you can give to a performer. If that comes off the table, I don't want the WWE belt now to rotate every 2 weeks mm-hmm. amongst all the stars to keep them happy. I like what they're doing with Punk right now. I think Punk's been WWE champion now for about 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good. I think that's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to stay that way. But that would be my only fear. I'm fine with it as far as taking it away. But again, don't now turn the WWE title into a revolving belt.
When they got rid of the women's championship, and they basically combined the women's title and the Divas title, and now, you know, of course, Beth Phoenix is the only recognized individual women's champion. I actually thought that was good at the time because I thought it would force WWE to be a little more creative in how they use the other women. And we've seen that a little bit with some of them going into more managerial roles or you know, like the Funkasaurus dancers and stuff. Not all the girls are revolving around the Divas title or women's title. But I will say this, it has not helped the credibility of the individual title itself because they really don't defend that title. And I know that's the Divas belt. It's not as important. But at least by having the two championships, you do have more main event storylines that revolve around a title, and they seem important to the casual fan. Am I overthinking this, or should they keep the two?
No, I don't think you're overthinking at all. I think though that at the end of the day, we both want the same thing. We want whatever belts are out there. We want them to mean something,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's because they really don't right now. I mean, that's insane.
Well, let me ask you. Before we wrap this subject quickly, is it just the duration of championship reigns? Like you said, CM Punk 5 months long. Or is it the fact that Santino is the U.S. champion and he's basically a comic character? He can wrestle. I mean, I don't think you and I would disagree. He can wrestle.
Yep.
But they present him with the screen sock on his arm. Does that devalue the championship?
I think so. It's silly, but again, it's the WWE playing to their audience, which is a PG audience, and you know, they want to keep all the fans happy, whether it's adults, kids, whatever. So they throw the belt on this goofy guy, and some people love it, Me, for one, I just think it hurts the history a little bit.
Well, remember, the Intercontinental Championship, when we were growing up, was always put on the best wrestler in the company.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Whether it be, Tito Santana, the Macho Man, Ricky Steamboat, you're absolutely right.
They Greg Valentine, Mr. Perfect. I mean, these guys could really work.
Very good technical wrestlers.
Yep.
Now we see it put on a guy that, like you said, wears a sock on his hand.
Yep.
Or Drew McIntyre. I don't know which is worse, by the way.
Wrestling has always followed the old expression, if it didn't happen on television, it didn't happen. This has hurt house show ticket sales over the years. Now, recently, the WWE has tried to improve the house show experience. What else can they do? When you and I were growing up, we went to a lot of house shows at the Hershey Park Arena. It was a different industry at the time, though, right?
It was, yes.
And I always enjoyed the house shows, but there was a sense if it didn't happen at one of the big pay-per-views or Saturday night's main event, or at least on a Superstars taping, you weren't going to see anything of real importance. I don't think that's changed too much, even though the business has changed. They did have the tag team titles change hands recently. Remember that a couple months ago?
For sure. That's when Primo and Epico.
Yeah. And
still have trouble with his name, by the way.
Oh, I think you're right. I don't even know. But that was something that at the time created a lot of buzz because people were like, oh, my goodness, you never know. You never know from one show to the next what could happen. Well, then it came out. It was because, Evan Bourne failed his drug test. He popped.
right.
And, they had to get the belts off him as quick as possible. If they come around to Hershey, near where you live, are you taking your family to a regular house show?
Well, that's the question that I think we need to ask ourselves. I think if you and I were back, 15 years old, 14 years old, we would have no problem going to a house show in Hershey. Now that we're older and more seasoned, may I add, older and we understand the business more, the house show, we're not going to go and buy a ticket for it. We know that nothing's going to happen. But as a 15 or 14-year-old kid and the show comes around, a televised show might come around once a year,
mm-hmm.
Sure, we would flock to the house shows. That was our opportunity to see live action.
Right, and it's a good point because now we do have opportunities because we're working and stuff to go to bigger shows, and so maybe, it sounds like I'm not valuing the work done at those house shows. I don't mean to do that because the people that do get to go to those enjoy them. I feel, though, that you see the attendance figures. They're not great.
No.
You were talking about the TNA attendance figures at house shows are awful.
Yeah. No, you're right, but I still think it – I'm going to contradict myself from something I said earlier here. I still think even if, say, the WWE loses money on a house show, at least they're extending their brand.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're getting into an audience that, those tickets are probably priced a little bit lower than a televised event, I would assume. I might be wrong about that. But it gets the product out to more people.
Yep, and it also does allow the workers to try new things in the ring, and if they know they have a big pay-per-view match coming, they kind of work together a little bit. The other thing, when you and I were growing up, I didn't quite realize that the same show that we saw in Hershey was exactly done that the previous night in Philadelphia, and that exact show was done the previous night in New York. You know what I mean?
That's unbelievable. I will also say, if you recall those house shows we went to, the ring entrance, it was so short. If the entertainers had music, it was played through like a tape recorder into the microphone.
No, that's no lie.
I mean, it was as amateur as you can get.
But the WWE has improved that, apparently. I have not seen the new house show set, but I heard it's better.
I heard that, too. I did hear that. And I do think if they ever launched this WWE network and they could show some house shows on there once in a while, I'd like to see that.
Well, I'm going to extend this topic because I want to talk more on this. The reason I don't think they're going to do that, and I love your idea, the reason I don't think they're going to do that is because, for example, working towards WrestleMania 28, when Kane was going to wrestle Randy Orton, he was working house shows up to that week where he was losing to John Cena almost exclusively in like last man standing, tables matches, all that kind of stuff. The people in the crowd had a great time at the house shows, but I don't think it's to your advantage when you're prepping for a big pay-per-view with Cena versus Rock to have Cena versus Kane, and Kane's not even with Randy Orton and Kane's losing it. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to kind of tell the stories on TV and still put a house show together. Does that make sense?
It does, and I actually thought about that as well. I think you could still pull various matches from various house card shows.
True.
So you can highlight maybe some of the lesser known wrestlers.
Oh, so not show the whole thing.
Correct. Like if you remember the USA Network program they used to show, mm-hmm. where they would pull a match off of the card from the Garden.
I love it.
And then they would pull a match off of a card from somewhere else.
The WWE has finally started to fully embrace social media. Promoting their stars on Twitter and Facebook, as well as creating feedback forums on WWE.com, etc. Now, recently, Rosa Mendez and the tag team champions, essentially were told to use Twitter to plant a storyline. They're upset about not being on the WrestleMania card. Is this the future, or has the WWE taken this too far? I think it's kind of a cool thing, because you give some performers who are not always on Raw or SmackDown, etc., an opportunity to use some social media, you know, to be more involved with the company. And it gives these characters a little more depth. Jamie, do you go on Twitter? Would you rather see Rosa Mendez on Twitter as herself and kind of a little more about her? Or would you rather go on there and read storylines that you know have been planted?
Yeah, I don't mind really seeing either of those. You know, Twitter to me, the way I use it, is more of a news source. Therefore, I'd almost rather just see them as individuals than performers. But I don't get bent either way, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
What does bother me is I think WWE is going overboard. I don't need to hear every 3 minutes about what's trending on Twitter, right? I mean, I don't need to hear every time someone comes out, I don't need to see their Twitter handle. I think they go way too far overboard with it. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, guys like Chris Jericho and CM Punk do a pretty nice job of kind of blending everything together. You know, Punk can be kind of a jerk on Twitter because he's kind of a jerk in the ring, and everyone loves it. You know, it's just who he is. It's almost like we believe him so much, whether it's in the ring or on social media, that that's just who he is. And yet Beth Phoenix, who, you know, is a doll, I love her, but she plays a heel in the ring. She's big, bad, and intimidating, and then she's super sweet on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, and I do feel that that could be confusing or diminish her to some degree to casual wrestling fans.
Yeah, and you see that a lot with wrestlers, right? I mean, they come out of their persona and become themselves, and I don't know, maybe WWE should tell them to shy away from that.
Sounds like you got Matilda there in the background. Right?
Sorry about that. Matilda.
Yeah.
I can't promise she's not going to act up again. But
Remember when the Islanders stole her? Now we know where they put her.
All right. Wild card topic number one. The WWE has been negotiating some contracts with the likes of Finlay and Terry Taylor. It appears they want these guys as trainers for some of their young FCW talent. Does the WWE actually understand the need for younger talent? Dave, I think this is a good sign. I think that they realize the need to develop their younger stars, and they're bringing in some of these veterans to help them along. We're going to start to see new talent come onto the WWE scene here pretty soon. You've already seen the likes of Dean Ambrose and some other FCW talent wrestling on superstars and at dark matches before events and so forth. I like this idea. I think it's a good idea. I think this is where they need to invest. What do you think?
I like it too. And you know, Finlay and Terry Taylor, very respected, great trainers. I like it because I'm not a big fan of the Tough Enough series. It's mildly interesting. I mean, Bill DeMott, great trainer. Booker T, they had a good cast. You know, Stone Cold's great and all that stuff. Trish Stratus. But, you know, get the trainers in there and just train. I don't need it to be televised. You know, build the depth within the WWE and have these young guys come in ready to work. I will say, the WWE, it feels very top-heavy because from one pay-per-view to the next, it's Orton or Cena or Triple H or, you know, it's kind of over the last couple of years been the same guys near the top, Punk, Chris Jericho. But there is a lot of talent, I think, even the lower part of the WWE roster. Do you think, Jamie, it has to come from FCW, or do you think guys like Dolph Ziggler, Cody Rhodes, et cetera, are ready in the next 6-12 months to be main event guys?
Yeah, I think Cody Rhodes has already shown that he's ready to be a main event guy.
He's good, right?
Right. I think Dolph Ziggler is getting there. He seems to be very, you know, over with the crowd and so forth. So, yeah, I think they're starting to make that conversion. I think they may have tried it a little bit with Nexus and so forth and realized that these guys weren't really ready yet, and therefore they had to bring some other guys back that, quite honestly, I had written off, such as Mark Henry and Kane, and they started putting these guys back in main event matches at pay-per-views. And again, I think that was done because they realized they just don't have the young talent that they thought they had. They just weren't ready.
Well, here, so, Jamie, a big problem is that the territory system is not there anymore.
Right.
You know, guys aren't going to Portland for 6 months and then down to San Francisco for 6 months, then to Amarillo, Texas for 6 months. You know, learning to work different styles, learning to work different crowds. It's kind of why all these guys come out and they're kind of the same. They're big, good-looking guys, but they haven't really learned how to work. And I think that, more than anything, has really hurt the WWE. And to touch on this real quick, everyone blames Vince McMahon for the dissolve or the destruction, if you will, of the territory systems. Really, the problem was cable TV.
Sure.
He used it better than anybody else. And, you know, Hogan and, you know, that took it to the top. But cable TV now brought a star across the world. It wasn't regional anymore. Jerry Lawler in Memphis type of thing. So the territory system not being there, dissolving, has really hurt. I don't think the WWE has struck the right chord yet in how to train the next generation.
Yeah, Dave, you bring up a great point. I will say there's some of these FCW guys and gals, they are coming from other wrestling promotions.
Uh-huh.
Now, certainly nowhere near as developed as the old territories, but they're at least coming with some seasoning.
Uh-huh.
But you're right, David, and that's one thing I underestimated, was the different styles of wrestling, whether it be, you know, Stampede and a lot of those guys focusing on submission style wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
or other areas that focused on more aggressive styles of wrestling. You're right, that does seem to be the missing ingredient.
Well, plus you can play face in Portland, and you're a heel in Texas. You know what I mean? You get so much experience working face, heel, and tag team singles, lucha styles, whatever you're into, you know. And so these guys, it's like they develop one style. I'm not necessarily criticizing them. It's just it is what it is.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I will say this, Dave. I thought, you know, when ECW went away, I thought that the WWE really lost something. I thought ECW was a great training ground for some of their younger up-and-coming stars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, guys like The Miz and Morrison and Punk and Kofi, they all developed on ECW. Now, you know, we still have superstars and NXT, but when those are shown over the internet, it's just not visually getting out to a large enough audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of these guys really lack some of that TV time that would allow them to be a little more seasoned when they hit the WWE.
The WWE Hall of Fame is Vince McMahon's creation. It has gained certain credibility over the years. However, few people know that there is a real professional wrestling Hall of Fame with an actual building located in Amsterdam, New York. Has the WWE's version hurt the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame's visibility and importance? Well, I think it has, actually, because I think people are now in some ways conditioned to believe that the WWE Hall of Fame is the most important, because we see it on television. WrestleMania season, announcing who's going into the class of 2012, and then we see the broadcast on USA Network. I've never been to the one in Amsterdam. Jimmy, we should go. That'd be a fun road trip.
It would. I don't know anything about the content. I don't know what they have there. I think it's interesting, you know, Vince has bought up all this old history and memorabilia from, you know, NWA, AWA, World Class Wrestling. So, you know, does Vince have the market on a lot of this stuff, whereby he really should be the one running the Hall of Fame? Granted, he needs a physical building for it.
No, I don't think he should be the one running it, because then it's, you know, basically him saying who goes in and who doesn't go in, and that's tricky, because then there's personal grudges and all that kind of business dealing that could influence his decision. I think that the idea of a regular pro wrestling Hall of Fame with a building that we could go take our kids to is a wonderful idea. It's hard to coexist, though, with the gloss, glamour, and shine that Vince brings to everything he does.
Yeah, it won't happen while Vince is living. Probably won't happen while Hunter's living or Steph is living.
Or I'm living. I mean, like,
it
could be years. It could be that this is now where we are. And do you like the Hall of Fame ceremony at WrestleMania every year?
I do, and I think you're going to differ with me on that. I do because I don't mind giving guys 30 minutes to talk about their history and to tell some stories and so forth. I think it got a little long-winded this year when you had each horseman talking for 30 minutes,
yes.
But I don't mind it. I like to hear the different stories.
Well, I like the fact that they do recognize the individuals. For example, Wendy Richter, when she was inducted in 2010, it was a really nice moment for her. And I think that the performers are very happy to be inducted and they're recognized and it's a great night for them. I'd be almost okay if we just said, here are the class of 2012 inductees and here's an official video on their career. I don't need the actual ceremony anymore. But that's a personal opinion. Some people love it.
Do you think you'd feel differently if the people being inducted were, let's say, in one class, it was the Honky Tonk Man, Randy Savage, Tito Santana, guys that you grew up with? Do you think you'd feel differently?
Well, I don't know, maybe. I mean, when Beth Phoenix hopefully one day gets inducted, I want them to give her an hour to talk, you know.
Well, that's like three shout-outs to Beth Phoenix in one show. That might be a record.
Jamie, I'm going to take over the Blast from the Past segment this week. Is that okay?
You're stealing it from me?
Well, you took over the intro. I'm taking over the Blast from the Past.
Fair enough.
And I wanted to talk about a day and a time when wrestling storylines, I feel, used to be a lot simpler. You know, straightforward good guy versus bad guy, anti-Americans versus the good old USA. Start, you know, of course, like Nikita Koloff, Nikolai Volkov, Boris Zhukov and his huge head. It was easy to hate them because they represented the Soviet Union in that case, a clear enemy of the United States at the time. Have the lines between good guys and bad guys been blurred too much? Do you miss guys like the Iron Sheik?
I mean, Dave, this is a great topic, and I do. I miss the time that we grew up and the feuds that were created, and it was very clear-cut lines. What's interesting is I don't think what has happened over the course of the last 15 years has been a creation of Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been the audience. I think the audience liked, you know, a foul-mouthed guy and Steve Austin who would come out and drink beer, and they thought that was cool. They liked the NWO, you know, these bad guys that came out and took over WCW. The fans liked that. And, you know, even as recently as Daniel Bryan, I mean, the guy's a heel. He's talking down to women, and yet the fans go crazy for him. So I don't like it. But it is what it is, and it's not something that Eric Bischoff or Vince McMahon or whoever is necessarily creating. I think they move the character a certain way based on the fans.
Well, you could ask 1,000 people, what do you think of CM Punk? But you're not going to get everyone to agree. Oh, he's tremendous. You know, some people won't like him. You know, same with Chris Jericho. Same with John Cena, my goodness. I mean, there's a lot of people, no matter how much CM Punk will heal up in the ring, will still think he's the coolest guy ever. Or how much Chris Jericho heals up in the ring. You know, and good Lord, John Cena's the ultimate good guy, and people still can't get past, you know, the personal biases towards him. When you and I were growing up, though, everybody loved Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I've heard people say that not everyone loved Hulk Hogan. Boy, I don't remember that.
No, they did. You and I were in crowds. People cheered him universally, correct? Yes or no?
I completely agree with that. Yeah. WrestleMania 5. I mean, it was the loudest cheers I've ever heard.
And we love Macho Man, and we were clapping at the end because it was a great moment.
Absolutely.
To close this topic, I do think wrestling reflects society. You mentioned how like Vince McMahon and the crowds kind of dictating that. I think that wrestling tries to tie into trends within society, which is why the Soviet Union was such a big thing for wrestling in the 70s and 80s, because the USA had such a rivalry with them. I think it's just that the society has changed now, and wrestling, it's been harder for them to grab on to concrete, quote-unquote, villain types. And so you have the anti-hero that maybe, you know, Steve Austin was the greatest of all time, that and certainly ushered in this trend.
Are you trying to tell me that funk music is coming back?
Let's hope so. We can dust off our old clothes.
Dave, before we sign off, you know, it's another week, and I have another rant.
I thought we're done here.
No, I've got to get something off my chest again.
Okay.
It's not related to wrestling, but I really just want to talk about it. You know, Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball, mm-hmm. has taken well-deserved criticism over the years. His handling or lack thereof of a very serious performance-enhancing drug issue was preposterous at best. That said, I want to shine a positive light on Mr. Seelig for something he has done very well. While the addition of one wildcard team to the baseball playoff system was great, the addition of a second wildcard team is just magnificent. The baseball season is 162 games long. We should reward more teams for getting through a grueling season with one of the best records in the league. Dave, I don't know if you know this, but the 1993 Giants went 103-59, a .636 winning percentage, and they didn't even make the playoffs. More playoff teams lead to more late season excitement. Even with two additional wild card teams, Major League Baseball, when compared to other major sports, still has the lowest percentage of teams making the playoffs. So, Dave, this week, my yes, yes, yes award goes to Mr. Bud Seelig.
Oh, Jamie, good rant. You know, you get me all lathered up about this stuff, and it's going to just wake something off my chest, too. Is that okay?
Did you say you're getting lathered up?
Getting all lathered up over here.
Jeez. Yeah. Let's end this show.
Well, I can't end it without going back to what we talked about a little bit earlier about the young kids the WWE is training, because they do get guys off the indie circuit, and some guys can come off the indie circuit and be major stars. I mean, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, you know, a lot of experience there and have done very well for themselves, obviously. I do think part of the problem is that these indie crowds, the indie scene, which is a huge part of the internet wrestling community, has shaped the way these guys work. I hear online and read online a lot of people talking about how wrestlers go from spot to spot to spot to spot to spot now. The matches they put together don't tell a story like they did, quote-unquote, in the old days. You know, we act like we're 100 years old.
Right.
But the truth is, people want to see one big spot after another. And that doesn't tell the story to me in the way that I really want to see it. I want a spot to mean something. I want a spot to make me go, ooh, wow, that was great. Not, oh, wow, I saw four of those already this match. And so the problem, though, is these indie crowds are very fanatical, and they expect instant gratification, much like we do in society. We have 24-hour ATMs, 24-hour restaurants, you know, 24-hour gyms. We want instant gratification. We want accessibility. And these matches at the indie level a lot of times are just put together to get the crowd chanting something rather than to tell a really good story in the ring. And I think that it does, over the course of time, not allow these young kids to really learn how to, quote-unquote, work a storyline.
I understand where you're coming from, and I have to agree with everything you just laid out.
And there's a great place in wrestling, Jamie, for independent crowds and wrestling in that spirit. I'm not saying there's not, but it has changed the way a lot of up-and-coming wrestlers work in the ring.
Sure.
I'm all lathered. I can't get this off my mind. I'm all lathered up about it.
Oh, you scare me.
Cold shower time.
Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM. That's OWWCOM, to get all program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Radio Facebook homepage. So until next time, I am Jamie.
This is David.
We hope you've enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.